It is time for Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven. Arthur joins us on a Monday morning, and we talk about, yeah, that's right, food. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning. Yes, happy Hanukkah. Did you know, does anybody know, that the largest menorah in Brooklyn is right here at my door in the Grand Army Plaza? And I didn't hear singing and dancing last night, usually on the first night there is, but who knows? Maybe my windows are better insulated than I thought and I can't hear. Anyway, for some reason, this one is lit at 3:30. That I did look up. Anyway, this is more like post-Thanksgiving. It's very odd, I think, to have Hanukkah right on top of Thanksgiving. You go from one fattening holiday to another. So, in fact, I have a new thing. I don't want to make latkes this year, but my great nieces are coming, so we're going to eat donuts instead. Because I can buy sensational fried donuts. Yep. Are, in fact, a big Hanukkah specialty in many, many cultures. But back to Thanksgiving. We did not roast a turkey this year. Instead, we bought one smoked from Nodines. Marshall, do you frequent Nodines?
I go to Nodines every once in a while for bacon and some, yeah, and but not a lot.
Famous for bacon.
Yep.
Nodines is famous. I think this must have been the 1970s or 80s, early 80s maybe, that Marion Burroughs of the New York Times wrote about Nodine's bacon, and it was a run on Nodine's bacon for a long time. Because at that point, that was like the only bacon you could buy, at least in this part of the world, without nitrates. But back to their turkey. I did this many years ago when I revolted against turkey and made a stuffed breast of veal for Thanksgiving. But ordered the Nodine smoked turkey just so that we would have it as decoration. Well, that backfired on me this year because my niece, the 8-year-old, doesn't like looking at whole animals on the table. She didn't freak out, but she did, in fact, voice her displeasure and would not eat any of the turkey. The breast was fabulous. And we heated it up in the oven so that it wouldn't be just room temperature, that it would at least be warm. But I had made, with some very good homemade broth, I have to say, a really good gravy. But it wasn't turkey gravy, it was chicken gravy. And we had mashed potatoes for the gravy, so we had, and you know, you have to have gravy. I usually make a really, if I may say so, superb gravy with the turkey. You know, wingtips and neck and gizzards and like that. And I just make a broth. And I used to do this even when I did not do Thanksgiving. We would go to my sister's house for Thanksgiving. And my brother-in-law was in charge of, I should call him the unlamented, is what I usually refer to him. Anyway, would roast the turkey, did a good job at that. Not much else, but that he did. And anyway, I made the gravy anyway. In any case, I made all this stuff. The dark meat on the Nodine's turkey I found to be tough. And I did get some good slices off the thighs. I like dark meat. But in general, it was sinewy and tough. So instead of eating it that way, I said, this is something I used to do. I don't know what inspired me at the time, but you could buy a smoked turkey leg in my supermarket. I don't think the current supermarket I shop in sells them. I haven't looked. I bet, does Nodine sell just legs and thighs? I mean, they do sell just breasts.
Yeah, I think they butcher it, stuff like that. Yeah, I would think that on request.
They must. You know, if they have on breasts only, they might. Well, maybe, I don't know. I'm going to call today, in fact, because I made a broth, a smoked turkey broth with what I, you know, there was a lot of meat on here. because, as I said, it was tough and sinewy. But it made the most superb broth and relatively lean. And even if it had some turkey fat in it, I left the skin on and everything. I wanted the flavor, the smoky flavor from the skin and some of the fat. It didn't render very much fat at all. And what little it did is good fat, poultry fat being the, if you're gonna, I don't want to say most healthy fat because I'm into fat myself. But anyway, it's a relatively unsaturated form of animal fat. I'll say that. So anyway, it made this great broth, and now what do I do with it? You know, we're not eating carbohydrates, so otherwise I might have made like a mushroom barley soup would have been fabulous with this broth, but instead I bought two big bunches of kale. So, you know, this is sort of the what you have to eat if you've overindulged on Thanksgiving, because this is like no calories to speak of, absolutely delicious, and so healthy. I don't even want to look it up because it's so healthy. So it's two huge bunches of kale. Now you got to rip off the heavy stem ends, wash it well, and I use plain old green American style kale, nothing fancy, no Tuscan kale, dinosaur kale, whatever they're calling this. I love it. A dark green, tall kale. No, it's the broadleaf frilly kind. Very cheap. I really was out to buy, it was one of those shoppings where what I went out to buy, I couldn't find. I went out to buy chicken backs to make broth. It was the first really snappy day around here. I said, got to refill the freezer with chicken broth. And they didn't have any backs because, as my butcher said, somebody just came in and bought whatever we had. So somebody else had the same idea that I did. And the other thing I went out for was collard greens. And I don't know why, but there were no collards to be found, so I bought the kale. And I don't eat a lot of kale because I'm rebellious. And kale, you know, has been far too trendy the last few years. Before kale became trendy, I loved kale. So that's my personality here. But I know I did often enough make kale soup with potatoes and sliced sausage, like a kielbasa was very good. Nowadays, I could buy probably a more Portuguese or Spanish type sausage that would be good in that. But in any case, or chorizo kind of sausage. In any case, two huge bunches of kale went into my broth, and I would say it took a good 15 minutes between coming back to the broth. And by the way, the broth was still hot. I strained it, of course. I kept the meat aside for a while, thinking I was going to chop it up and put it back into the broth with the kale. But the meat was actually quite, I cooked it to death, got to say. And it had some flavor, but it was so stringy that I didn't want to deal with that. So I had to toss the bones and meat that I had made the broth. And the kale itself was so tasty in the broth. I didn't need to do anything. When we ate it as a soup bowl of greens, really it's greens and what they call pot liquor in the South, the water resulting, the soup resulting from cooking the greens. By the way, of course, in the South you would have used a smoked ham hock. But to make it a little, it's the turkey didn't make it taste exotic, but I must say it was a good use, a very good use of those parts of the turkey we didn't love so much. But the breast was superb, and it was a nice Thanksgiving. My nephew, who loves to cook, and loves to have his children cook with him, decided he was going to make the first pies of his life. And as a devotee of Melissa Clark at the New York Times, he must have read everything she wrote about pies. In any case, he made an apple pie and a, in quotes, pumpkin pie, according to Melissa Clark, using a technique that I never even heard of. That doesn't mean, you know, it's a, you know, new to me. I have to ask Melissa one day. She lives very close to me here, and I do bump into her once in a while. Where she came up with this technique, unless Brian can tell me, since he reads so much Melissa Clark. And the technique is this: you don't blind bake the pie crust. Now, he made the pie crust days before I got there, so I didn't watch him do this. He told me that one pie was made with 100% butter, and the other pie was made with like 80% butter and 20% shortening. In the eating, I failed to ask him which was which, but they were slightly different. And the technique for both is the same. Melissa instructs you to heat up your sheet pan in a 425-degree oven. Preheat the oven and the pan together to 425. Then when you put your filled pie on the sheet pan, it's getting instant heat and a lot of heat from the bottom. By the way, sheet pans, I find, are mostly, if not always, made of aluminum, which is a very, very good conductor, next to copper. It's a great conductor. People don't like to cook directly on aluminum, so a really good stainless steel pan, however, should be mainly aluminum, but with the stainless steel on the surface. In any case, you put your aluminum sheet pan in the 425-degree oven, heat it up, and then I think he baked the cake for 10 or 15 minutes, the pie, rather, at 425, and then reduce the heat to 350. As I pointed out to him, you know, you're not actually baking at 350 because and the oven takes time to get down to 350 once it's been at 425. So it's a very hot oven. The crust that was exposed was superb. The crust on the bottom, which is what you really care about here, because this whole system, this whole technique is about making your bottom crust crisp, as opposed to soggy, which can be even in a pre-baked pie crust, depending on what the filling is. But this came out super crisp. I'm glad he's not listening, but one of them I thought was a little tough, but that could have been his first time around making pie crust, too. But one of them really was layered and crisp and delicious. And I'm going to try this myself, not today. So I ate both pies. The apple pie was filled with pre-cooked apples. Melissa instructs you to slice up 11 cups of apples. I'm very good at visual facial relations, and I could tell without him even measuring that he was up to at least 10 cups. I said, you know, you're tired, don't peel another apple. You don't need it. And in fact, it was just the right amount. You saute the apples with butter, and they give off some juice, as you can imagine, depending on the kind of apple. I don't know what he had there. They were red apples, though. And you sprinkle on a little cornstarch, toss it again, and then you fill your pie crust, top crust too. And he sprinkled he did an egg wash on the top and sprinkled it with coarse sugar. And I got to say, that was sensational tasting. I'm really into this sprinkling it with coarse sugar. When I was up your way a few weeks ago in Sheffield, there is a bakery called, you know the name, Marshall? I'm thinking it's something with pig. They had incredible pastry, little tarts, and I only ate half. Sprinkled, outside of the crust with and a very good, very, very good pastry crust sprinkled with sugar. I went wild. I haven't eaten sugar in a year. Anyway, so well, I would, if you're a pie baker, I would definitely try this system out because it works. And I now see the value, by the way, in $30 perfect pies, which in Brooklyn, it's easy to find a $30 pie. I actually haven't looked at the price. I also saw $5 pies at the supermarket. But if you go into a boutique bakery, you pay plenty. And truthfully, I see now why it's worth it. I'm not sure I want to... even though Brian thought this was easy going into it, he had to admit later, it's a lot of work to bake pies. Make a good pie. So I have to do a little kvetch of the week here. I heard Nigella Lawson say on TV that green peppers were not fit for human consumption. I think she was serious.
I guess I'm not human.
Pardon me?
I guess I'm not human. I love green peppers.
I love green peppers for their own sake.
Yeah.
Not as an also-ran to red peppers.
Yeah.
I love red peppers. You know, a red pepper is nothing but a ripe green pepper.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so yellow peppers start out green, too, and orange peppers start out green. And even purple peppers can start out green. Some of them, I understand, do start growing purple. But I think most, actually, when you cook a purple pepper, it's, say that three times fast, cook a purple pepper. Well, if you cook a purple pepper, it ends up turning dark green. So anyway, a green pepper is an unripe pepper, which is why, one reason why, it is much less expensive than a red pepper because it doesn't require as much time on the vine or plant, so to speak, and apparently because it's not ripe and more fragile, it can be harvested mechanically without a problem or rolls down a conveyor belt without getting all bruised up. Things like that. It has nothing to do with the actual gastronomic or culinary or, I don't know, deliciousness of the pepper. So I like green peppers, and I don't roast green peppers because that does bring out the bitter edge. Although, wait, I take that back, because here's something I used to make with green peppers, and you could do it with red peppers too, but you roast your green peppers whole, and you got to do this in a 450-degree oven, and I put them right on the rack, red or green. This is how I do it. And I'm finding that at 450, a pepper takes about 20 minutes to get charred here and there. If you want them a little bit more soft and a little bit more charred, you can leave them in for 25 minutes. Then you put them in a I put them in a pot and let them steam until they're in their own steam, a covered pot. Until, you know, the old days we used to say put them in a paper bag, but I don't trust paper bags anymore. And the idea of putting it in a plastic bag, that I don't trust either. So I think a nice enameled cast iron pot or whatever pot you have is a good idea. And then let them come to room temperature. And the green ones, I pickle. This is what they used to serve on the table is a giveaway, so to speak, at what they called Romanian steakhouses. The Romanian steakhouses of my youth. The only one that's left, I have no idea if it's still open, but I wouldn't be surprised if it is Sammy's Romanian on Christie Street on the Lower East Side. But there used to be a lot of them, and this was a standard item. Perhaps it really is Romanian. And they would be pickled with garlic. I think there's a recipe for this in Jewish Home Cooking. I think that's where I would have it. You know, it was along with other, what my mother would call sours, which would be cucumbers, salad, which is something I make regularly, by the way. It's so refreshing, just cucumber sliced. And also, I like to play with my mandolin. It's a very good good thing to be doing with the mandolin. I slice them really thin, and then I just dress it with a combination of water and vinegar, like half and half, and a small, depending on how much cucumber, one cucumber makes quite a lot of cucumber salad, with the vinegar and water, and a sliced, also on the mandolin, onion. You can cut the onion in half to make it easier to slice. Small to medium onion. You don't need a lot. You should let it sit for a while. My grandmother always did this with sugar, and then when she became diabetic, she added sweet and low, which I couldn't tolerate. I must say, I tried it recently, and I still can't tolerate it. It really brings out, it's a metallic flavor. It's a metallic, and it really ruins your palate for other things.
Yeah, it's a sting.
So if you need a little sweetness, a teaspoon of sugar per cucumber softens the blow, and that's quite enough.
I know what you're talking about. It's almost like a stingy, I don't know, a taste to it.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I sometimes even, I drink lemonade. Meaning, I drink slightly sweetened lemon water. They say, you know, I looked this up recently. They say that lemon water before meals, starting the day and before meals, aids in weight loss. But there is apparently no scientific basis in this. It's strictly, as they say, anecdotal. Meaning, people who do it report that, oh, it's helped. But this brings me back to an endocrinologist I went to several years ago before he abandoned me and the whole practice, who was Persian. And he identified as Persian, not Iranian. And so he said, you know, you should eat like a Persian. I said, what does that mean? He said, have salad first. Well, fact is, maybe he didn't know I knew about Persian cuisine. And that's not necessarily so. They don't eat salad first. But in many cultures where people live to be a long time, listen to this, they do eat pickled vegetables first. Think about it. You go to a Middle Eastern restaurant, they serve pickled squash, pickled turnips. That's those pink cubes in a little dish. In southern Italy, pickled vegetables, certainly in the winter, are a major source for antipasti. You sit down at the table and you might have the pickled pickled eggplant, pickled zucchini, and called in Naples scapesh for escabeche because it's first fried and then pickled, meaning put in vinegar. So anyway, all these pickled things, I'm thinking all this acidic acid that you eat first is probably helpful. I don't mean acidic. Citric acid is probably very helpful, if not for your longevity, at least for your digestion. So there we are.
Right.
We're eating donuts for Hanukkah. Did I say that already?
Donuts for Hanukkah. Well, that's not that far out of the question. If it's fried.
No, it's not far. It's right on the question because anything fried. And I know, by the way, that my nephew and his family are having latkes, I think either last night or tonight, with some other family. And I thought, well, we have this great donut place in Prospect Heights, which is, it's the store is maybe four blocks from me at the most, which is certainly a nice, and it's a nice little walk, I mean, tree-lined streets. So we may walk over and let the girls pick their own donuts. These are giant donuts, come in a lot of creative flavors. I was going to say weirdo flavors. Some of them are. I have to find out. Maybe I'll have to go buy one today. If the hibiscus is a sour hibiscus or not, because I just discovered that Maya, who's 5 and a half, is sensitive to sour. And what impressed me was that she was able to describe the sensation, and she was able to, and she said, you know, it's too sour for me. But anyway, she felt it in her, I don't know what it is. You know where you feel tannin and sour, like in your cheeks?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what that, is there a name for that?
No, not that I know of.
No, well, she said, I'm feeling it in my cheeks. And then she said, oh, it's too sour for me. So, I don't know, hibiscus. I know she's going to want that one because it's pink. It's the pink donut.
Well, like you said, do a test run.
Exactly. It's an excuse to eat a donut. It's, by the way, if before anybody writes or calls, the name of the place is Dough. D-O-U-G-H. Dough.
That's good.
And yes, it was famous when it was in Bed-Stuy, but some reason, I don't really know the history here, it's now in Prospect Heights on Vanderbilt Avenue.
All righty.
So I'm going to eat more of kale in turkey broth. We have more to eat today. We're still trying to lose the splurge of last week, as I'm sure, you know, get prepared for Christmas. The average weight gain between Thanksgiving and New Year's is 7 pounds. Did you know that?
Not for me this year.
Well, I'm going to try not, but we'll see. Remains to be seen.
Right. Well, have a good week, Arthur, and we'll speak to you next week.
You too. Bye.
Take care. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on The Breakfast Club on Robin Hood Radio.
Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, Hillsdale Home Chef. More information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.